Kate Van Dam is the head of strategy and growth at SkyFi, a marketplace for geospatial data and analytics. She is also a veteran, having served for over 10 years as an attack helicopter pilot for the U.S. Marine Corps, retiring from active duty in 2015 at the rank of major. Kate, welcome to The Splinter.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
So, Kate, I have been looking forward to this conversation for a long time. You not only have a unique and fascinating personal background, but you also happen to find yourself at the intersection of two or three topics that we've covered with recent guests, like strategy, satellite imagery, and data. So it'll be fun to have them all come together in one place. Jumping right in, SkyFi describes itself as providing this almost on-demand access to Earth observation data, saying it, quote, gives users the power to capture satellite images at a chosen resolution during a desired time frame in a specific place. So I'd love to start with the basics. How does SkyFi make this possible? And how is the company different from other imagery providers that some of our listeners might have heard of, like Maxar and Planet?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for the question. And the reason that SkyFi excited me so much that I wanted to join the team, besides being a powerhouse team, is the fact that we really are bringing geospatial analytics and imagery to the consumer, which has never really been done in a way that we're doing it and as successfully as we are. And how we go about that is we've built a geospatial marketplace. This is all about partnerships. At the end of the day, we're as strong as our partners are. And in this case, you know, what we're doing is these are atmospheric balloon companies, these are satellite companies, aerial imagery companies. We have plans, you know, to integrate drone companies, anything that takes a picture of Earth, whether that's in electro-optical, so your traditional taking a picture. I know you recently had Gabe on from Umbra, so whether that's synthetic aperture radar, hyperspectral, multispectral, seeing outside of that visible range, radio frequency. There are so many ways to view our Earth that we can't actually see with our eyes. And there are great companies that are building these assets that are able to take, in essence, take these pictures or these snapshots. Pretty pictures are awesome, but at the end of the day, they have to do something for us, especially if you're going to expect them to be useful to businesses. And so in this case, the geospatial analytics are extremely integral also to our business, and I think to the way the world's going to continue to consume these sort of snapshots from space or from above. And so on the platform, we also partner with cutting-edge geospatial analytic companies. This is everything from change detection to fire detection to counting objects. I mean, there's a myriad of amazing use cases. We could spend the next hour or two of me going just what's on the platform, not even what's in the pipeline. And then, you know, we're trying to bring this to the consumer. Ideally, at some point, the consumer is sophisticated enough in how they can use this imagery that this is a very simple self-serve. But, you know, I think we'll probably get into this later, you know, the most sophisticated consumer of this imagery and these analytics is the government. And that has been where this entire industry has skewed towards. So at SkyFi, what we're doing is we are bringing the access to the individual. And we're doing this in an agnostic manner, right? And this is what differentiates us from the OG new space players like Maxar and Planet, all making amazing imagery and some good analytics out there as well. But we are bringing everybody to the consumer, where they're mostly bringing their own assets and companies that they've acquired over time. And so we're really excited about where the consumer is going to take this. And there's a long road to go. And again, I'm sure we'll get into this as far as, is there utility in building out a marketplace and is there potential for success? But that is what we're building at SkyFi. And yeah, every day is an adventure for sure.
The company was started in 2021, and today your network of partners, as you mentioned, operates a pretty diverse mix of sensors for Earth observation. You mentioned a few of them. I'd love if we can go over the different variety of sensors that exist and also touch on why it's important to have such a broad cross-section of different sensors as opposed to maybe starting with one corner of the market and expanding the business from there.
Yeah, absolutely. We can start with the most obvious, the easiest to think of is electro-optical. So this is truly taking a picture of the Earth And, you know, that comes in a variety of resolutions. So on the platform, we also have open data. Open data is essentially free data, right? This is usually provided by major space agencies. We have Sentinel-2 from the European Space Agency on there with plans to introduce Landsat as well, which is NASA and USGS. And then you have companies like Umbra that are putting open data out there. And so, you know, the lower resolution that you're getting off of the Sentinel-2, you're not going to really be able to see a lot of definition in the picture, but you will be able to pick up things like soil moisture content and various other, there's a lot of utility to that open imagery, and it's free. And then you have higher resolution when you start pushing up to 50 centimeter, 30 centimeter. Right now, we have a really great partner that has plans for 10 centimeter, another good company out of Austin. And so this helps you kind of see the definition in the actual picture itself. Then you have synthetic aperture radar. And I think Gabe's explanation of how that works is perfect. But what this comes into play is when you get up towards the poles or you get in the tropics, you often get a lot of weather. So taking pictures is, you're taking pictures of the top of clouds. In order to see through that, essentially you're bouncing, right, this radar off of the ground and having it come back up. And so that's how you're getting a lot of really great utility out of the synthetic aperture radar. You can see that through weather. Then you start pushing into multispectral and hyperspectral. So going back to eighth grade science, if you start thinking about your Roy G. Biv, that's your visible spectrum. Then you start working outside of that. You started getting into the non-visible spectrum. And there's a ton of utility in this. And I think some of the most, a very well-known capability is finding pyramids in Central America. You know, you can see through the canopy because you're able to see these different signatures of, the pyramid versus the canopy, et cetera. And so we actually are working with a really cool analytic company out of Virginia that is essentially creating a hyperspectral signature of everything on Earth. They can scan anything and create a hyperspectral signature. And if it's saturated enough picture, then we call it a barcode from Earth. You can find anything in these pictures. And so there, and then we have aerial company, right? So this company essentially flies planes around and contracts planes to be flown around to get pictures. And that's where you're getting really good resolution. Same with the atmospheric balloons. You're not going to be able to task this like you could potentially task a satellite, but they're taking really high resolution collects over major urban areas. And I mean, just one of those images, you could have 1,000 different uses, from everything from figuring out like public health, evacuation routes, real estate, flood zones, all from, you know, this single pass and this multitude of pictures that come from an atmospheric balloon. And as I mentioned earlier, you know, we plan to integrate at some point, also integrate RF. So we're talking, that's pretty sensitive right now, but there are some really great companies out there that are essentially degrading that radio frequency. Sorry, I hate acronyms and here I am using them. That radio frequency signal. Mostly this is used for maritime. You get into some spookier use cases, but there's a lot of utility in using this for maritime use cases. And then obviously what everybody's very comfortable with is weather. So overlaying weather onto that as well.
Fantastic overview. As I mentioned up front, you are the head of strategy for SkyFi. Strategy is a topic we've discussed previously on the podcast. It's an incredibly important discipline, especially for early stage tech startups, but admittedly, it's a bit of a vague term. So how do you describe your role and what goals are you focused on day to day?
Absolutely. I listened to your last podcast with McCormick and I thought it was absolutely brilliant. And I know he breaks it down to diagnoses, guiding policies, coherent actions. I am either a product or a victim of my early adult employment. And so, you know, on the military side of the house, we think of it as strategic, operational, and tactical, right? And so I think when it comes to business, so much of like business strategy really straddles the strategic and the operational. So you have these high, we call them pillars, right? What are we focusing on? And we focus on half years, right? So we've got H1, H2. Every quarter, we kind of review these, every 2 months on the leadership side. But we look at these pillars and we say, okay, where do we want to get to? What are we focused on? delve down a little bit deeper. And I think that, you know, those are kind of that coherent action capability. And then the day-to-day is the task. So while I am head of strategy at SkyFi, I also run the BD team. So kind of like that cat that's trying to touch all the different roof corners to not fall down most days. But yeah, and I'm happy to share kind of what our strategy looks like this year at SkyFi. But that's how we think about it, is high level at the end of the day, is what we're doing tangible to those original pillars. And I think that helps us make sure that we're focusing. And the beauty of being in a pre-Series A startup with approximately 30 people is we are very nimble. So if we go after this goal and we continue to pursue something and it doesn't work, then we can pivot. But I think what's really important is it's naming something, right? So we're able to pivot because we've articulated the objective and the goal on the front side, so we can recognize that's not working and then have an articulate objective that we're pivoting towards.
Switching to the business side that you mentioned, SkyFi is a marketplace, and marketplaces are especially unique businesses in that your job isn't to build widgets and sell them, it's to bring together buyers and sellers in one place and facilitate their interaction. Marketplaces can become incredibly profitable and durable businesses, but on the flip side, it's no secret that marketplaces can be tough companies to launch. Jeff Jordan at Andreessen Horowitz has written a lot about the topic, and he claims that there are two features he always looks for that signal potential outlier success for marketplace businesses: fragmentation of supply and intelligent lead generation. Do you agree with his framework? And if so, how do you think about the relative importance of those two factors when it comes to SkyFi?
Yeah, I think that's really unique. I haven't heard that, but it certainly tracks. I think let's talk about fragmentation of supply first, because that is where we find a lot of importance. So you have these really brilliant startups that have come before us and have collapsed before us. When they're trying to put together, they're trying to essentially hire everybody in-house, specifically around analytics, right? My ideal world is Earth observation companies focus on taking images and those snapshots of Earth. Analytic companies focus on what they're good at, whether that's a particular type of algorithm or that's a particular industry. And then what we do is we bring them all together in a single place. And where a lot of, I think, especially in the geospatial, where the marketplaces have failed, is either they do focus primarily on the government, right? That sophisticated legacy consumer, where they're still like the majority of the business. Government's pretty good at aggregating their own individual supply. Or as I mentioned, they bring it in-house. And by bringing everything in-house, you just can't scale enough. And the interesting thing is by bringing in partnerships, let's talk about the consumer really quickly. I think it's important to acknowledge that you have these very large businesses that do have geospatial. You usually find these in mining, energy, and ag, right? Really your commodities specifically. And many of these companies, the very successful ones, have geospatial teams. But the overall market, you know, one of the reasons I love SkyFi is that my bet and our bet at SkyFi is that how GPS was to backcountry backpackers in the US government 15 or 20 years, geospatial analytics is going to be to every single business, right? You can't, like all of ad tech, every single app we have on our phone runs with some sort of GPS capability. We anticipate nobody's going to be making any major decisions in the future without geospatial analytics. But you got to get it to the market for the market to become educated and become sophisticated consumers on their own. And you only do that by bringing along the best in class companies with you. And that's really, I think, the beauty of a marketplace and a well-run marketplace. And I will say that, you know, I don't know if it's secret sauce or whatever, but our engineering team especially, we have focused on non-geospatial experts to bring this to non-geospatial experts. Our engineering team is predominantly ex-Uber, ex-FinTech. They know how to build a platform. They know how to scale a platform. They know how to iterate within 4 days based on a large customer demand, and they know how to make it usable. And I think that goes to our overall thesis that this market, This entire industry is artificially constrained by continuously focusing on the government as a consumers instead of seeing the opportunities and having the patience to look at the rest of the world.
On the demand side of that equation, you kind of hinted at it, but there's this running joke. It's often said that the biggest challenge for geospatial companies is finding a customer that isn't the government. In a previous interview, Bill Perkins, SkyFi's founder, and Luke Fisher, the company's CEO, emphasized that while many of your partners and imagery providers are science and technology companies, SkyFi is a consumer company. Everything is about the customer and the end user experience. But as the company's head of growth, when faced with this sort of dichotomy between this large mass of traditional government and defense clients on one hand and the long tail of new consumer use cases on the other, how do you think about catering to both of those very different market segments? Is it one at a time? Is it both at once? How do you frame that in your own thinking?
Never one at a time. Life would be too boring if we did something like that. No, I think what we offer, so on the consumer side, you know, we found a lot of success with commodity traders. We found a lot of success with, you know, a lot of these companies that even if they do have geospatial teams, we're a one-stop shop, right? It's a simple API plugin, even if they have their own platform. Anything you can do on the platform, on the website, you can also do with an API plugin. And so when we're looking at the consumer side of the house, that's really important for us to find those folks that are using it. Because, you know, time and precision in the business world is money. Time and precision in national security world is lethality. And so when we look at, you know, the government and predominantly the U.S. government, but also supporting, you know, some other NATO allies, some other allies as well in Asia, we're not looking to sell them imagery. They don't need us for that. I ran a space portfolio at InQtel. I know how all the backend contracts work. They've got that down pat, right? But what they need is a platform. And that is exactly how we're kind of differentiating what we want to bring to the consumer and what we want to bring to the government. And on the government side of the house, our play is to bring the SkyFi platform into their unclassified spaces to provide all the utility and more that we're providing to our consumers. And so we believe we can do that simultaneously, and that both of those both sides of the house of the business, the government and the consumer, are extremely complementary because we continue to bring lessons learned or new developments, and we continue to bring those iterations across the two.
When it comes to educating sort of the long tail of end user consumer use cases, would you say that the major challenges are primarily educational and technical, or is it sort of a cultural challenge where the consumer is not yet aware of what information can be made available to them?
Yeah, I would say, goodness, it's a very nascent market when it comes to the education. But one, again, that goes back to your people, right? There's a woman on my team who, she has the patience of a saint, but she's a believer too, right? We only hire evangelists at SkyFi. So I think it's both. One, it's often interesting to sit down with a consumer and talk through all these different capabilities, because often once you explain it, once you show the tool, it really does become self-serve after that. And so, yeah, it's understanding the capabilities, the tools. SAR is synthetic aperture radar is very intimidating to read, you know, even something as basic as shadows go up, north doesn't go up, you know, something simple like that, which is why we're trying to bring, speaking to a company right now that overlays optical on top of SAR to help again with that translation, again, going back to eighth grade, maybe that was a good year for me, but you know, when you're trying to explain physics to somebody for the first time, you throw a ball, right? Because we see the ball, we understand, and we can start thinking of the forces around it. After a time, you don't need the ball, you don't need anything physical. That's really what we're doing with a lot of these different types of images. So yeah, I would say it's both understanding what's out there and then just the fact that you can even use geospatial imagery. Luke, our CEO, sat on a panel. We were in Singapore a month or two ago, sitting next to this gentleman who's responsible for millions of dollars of real estate development in India. And he told this story how, you know, they had started developing and then these rains came down and it washed everything out and it cost this company millions of dollars. And Luke was like, this is a very simple fix, and you know, it's on there. And it was such a good conversation though, because this gentleman is absolutely amazing at what he does, right? And that's what we want to be for our customers and for the end users, is they need to focus on doing what they do well, and what we're giving them the tools is just to do it a little bit better.
Pricing is an important variable in any strategist toolkit, but in SkyFi's case, I would guess that you are mostly dependent on your partners on that front and sort of limited by the best pricing that they're willing to pass along to you. When it comes to your job of negotiating partnerships and framing these agreements, is that truly a constraint or am I misunderstanding?
I wouldn't say it's a constraint. So we are purely revenue share. That is our model. The intent is to, and we're very transparent. You can go on and you can always see the price, which sometimes there's sticker shock for folks, but it is what it is. It's where the market is right now. It's interesting as we have gotten, you know, I think as we've grown as a company, as we become a more desirable place for large and small companies, to showcase their product, that obviously gives us much more leverage as well. And, you know, you have large companies like Planet, who we have on the platform. Planet's been a good partner to work with, you know, and it certainly took some time to get there. Like, I think, you know, we're working with a big company in that case. And so we are somewhat limited, but we have found that folks are so eager to get their product onto the platform that it gives us both leverage, and really we think of it less like leverage, more like opportunity, you know. And one of the things that's exciting that kind of comes into pricing is a lot of companies that we've been talking to, probably especially in the last, I'd say, 3 or 4 months, are coming from areas around the world that they have a lot of regional exposure, but they don't have international exposure. You know, and some of these companies only have 1 or 2 satellites up. And some of the ones that I'm really excited about, they're actually analytic companies who are putting up their own satellites. You know, so this allows them to monetize the pictures that they're already taking to make their algorithms better. And so by doing so, again, we're expanding that marketplace, expanding the exposure, and that gives us more opportunity to negotiate pricing.
You mentioned it, but today the industry broadly uses 2 revenue models, free data and consumption-based pricing, where users are billed according to the number or the quality of images that they buy. In the future, as customers become more frequent users of Earth imagery data, do you see room for a subscription model?
Yeah, so I think there's absolutely opportunity for that. Right now, the industry, it's very expensive to task a satellite. Again, as the model changes towards more commercial consumption, I think we'll see that change. And further, if we think of it similar to, you know, data on your cell phone, I don't know, 10 years ago, it used to be insanely expensive, and now everybody has unlimited data. And so I think as these satellite companies get more success, I think laser comms are going to change everything, right? Edge compute is going to change so much. If you can do a lot of that in space and only push down what's necessary and you can do it quickly, the latency is reduced, I think that's going to greatly change the price model as well as more consumers consuming this.
When you mentioned that laser comms might be a game changer for your industry, is that in reference to sort of the ground stations that you now depend on?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you have the large companies that are mostly running the ground station. There are a few startups and that are doing so as well. But to be able to either edge compute, so to do some of this analytics on the satellite, right, or to even be able to optimize what pictures you're going to be able to take based on the requirements for the analytics, all on the satellite itself, obviously reduces the energy needed there. And then further to get that down quickly, reduce the latency to the ground, and then to have a good API to plug into marketplaces like us or really to any consumer, I think those are all really important pieces that we're going to see grow over the next 5 years.
You've given me a perfect segue to my next question. I'm sure you and I will both agree that the space tech ecosystem is booming, both in terms of the number of startups in operation, but also the incredible variety of industries that they cater to. One trend that I think is still quite underappreciated, however, is the number of satellites being launched every year. In 2023, the United States launched over 2,100 satellites into orbit compared to 80 just a decade prior. When I came across that figure in preparation for today's chat, the first thing that came to mind, oddly, was a quote from Ted Sarandos, Netflix's chief content officer, all the way back in 2013. He said, quote, "The goal is to become HBO faster than HBO can become us." Given the ever-decreasing cost to launch and operate satellites, can you imagine a future in which SkyFi operates a constellation of its own?
It's an interesting question. You've used my CEO's favorite analogy as us to Netflix. Well, first, I think that's an interesting quote, to become HBO before HBO becomes us. You know, there's always the argument, well, somebody with, $100 million could probably do what you do. That's true, but to me, that's a boring argument, because what's the point of a startup, of starting any business, if somebody bigger than you may be able to do it better? But I think it's interesting for us, one of the things that we have, going back to one of your first questions, I think that we present to our partners, is we are agnostic. We don't pick winners. We put everything on the platform. We provide all the capabilities. So more sophisticated players, if they can have a turnaround time of 6 hours or 4 hours, again, as latency goes down, you know, at that point, the consumer is going to be selecting who, you know, they're going to be selecting the winners based on their requirements and obviously their budget. And so I think at least in the near term, what we want to do is we want to continue to iterate on that piece of it, right? Again, satellite companies want them to be amazing at being satellite companies. But what we want is we're really interested in like, okay, how does that get down to the ground station, right? That's an interesting like potential market to start. We've got a ways to go, right, before we would be doing it, but really to integrate ourselves. And we're exploring, like, how do we better get integrated with these ground stations? How do we facilitate that? The API development. It was very surprising to me, stepping into this role, how many companies put a satellite into space without an API. Not being critical, I would like that to happen more frequently so we could get what they're taking on onto our platform. But, you know, I think we're really, really focused on being that marketplace where everybody can showcase their capability. So can I predict 10 years down the road whether we see, you know, one of the things that we do see is we see all the data. We see the weakness in the market. We see where people are looking. We are very big on privacy at SkyFi. We do not share our users' information with any of our partners. But again, in that case, like having that really omniscient view of the industry itself, I think would absolutely lend itself to figuring out a particular place in the market where we would be able to maximize some sort of development down the line. We have to get very successful at doing what we're doing first. But I don't know if it would be satellites, to be perfectly honest.
It's such an interesting answer. I mean, when you take a step back, you've got the data layer that's coming from your partners. You've got the app layer that is being built currently by SkyFi. And there's an entire infrastructural layer, sort of the plumbing of the business that is, you know, ripe for opportunity. In the past, the satellite imagery industry has been infamous for its notoriously onerous licensing schemes. And I would imagine that a big part of your job when building partnerships is finding ways to simplify that process for end users. Currently, is all the data you provide made available under one singular SkyFi standard, or do you help manage that process on sort of a per vendor basis?
Nope. It's one EULA, so one end user license agreement. And this is something that, again, like we want to minimize the clicks to being able to task or to be able to get your analytics. So we work with our partners to ensure that, again, the privacy and that one EULA, because we don't want to make this onerous. It really goes back to the thesis and our entire point of existence is bringing this technology, bring this insight to the end user. And so much of that's educational. And look, we're all busy people. And so if I have to read through stuff or if I'm worried I'm going to get in trouble with, you know, something that I post on social media, et cetera, it's pretty straightforward in our EULA. Attribution is required. And, you know, I think there are some really brilliant companies in this space that I hope more companies follow along. And again, to call out our partner Umbra, you know, the Creative Commons, there's so much value in providing an image and allowing people to be creative with it, right? And if we get stuck in this, like, well, you have to pay $200 more in order to put this on your Twitter feed, right? Or, hey, you can have this image, but we don't want you to make any derivative products. So to do any sort of internal analytics for your customer, or you have to up, it's too much. It's too much. People just aren't going to take the time. They're going to go with the old ways, and this adoption is going to take even longer. So we do our part as much as possible to minimize that friction and allow people to get the imagery, you know, and ideally minimize the upsell on that. There are some partners on our platform that we're working with to allow derivative products on. Almost everything on our platform you can build your own analytics on top of. And we continue to pursue that really writ large across the industry. And as we grow, this is something that I want us to be a bit of a thought leader on, because again, we see the adoption rates and make it easier and people are going to buy. It's pretty straightforward, our capitalism right there.
The other kind of important contractual agreement aside from commercial licensing is export controls. In a recent article in The Atlantic, the journalist Graham Wood wrote about a potentially concerning pattern where missile strikes by Russia into Ukraine coincided with commercial orders for imagery of those same targeted sites, writing that, quote, a Ukrainian military source told me he believes that Russia's long-range strikes are aimed using satellite imagery provided by U.S. companies. He says the sequence is clear. A satellite snaps a picture of a site, then some days or weeks later, a missile lands. The author in this case was very cautious in noting throughout the piece that the evidence here is purely circumstantial, but nonetheless, I know that both you and Luke, SkyFi's CEO, are both veterans and patriots, and so I'm sure this is something you've both considered. In a world in which satellite imagery is increasingly accessible, how can companies like yours make sure that your technology is not inadvertently made available to bad actors?
Yes, that is certainly the discussion in the last few weeks. So first you need to, while we're in the realm of Ukraine, you need to look at Ukraine and how much Ukraine benefited from the access of commercial imagery. And it's no secret now, it was at the time, that Capella Space, so a synthetic aperture radar company, made available pictures to the Ukrainian government in the early stage of the invasion. And so that, I think that was kind of the beginning of this idea of like a crowdsourced war, right? The interesting thing about a crowdsourced war, and I 100% will stand behind the fact that the Russians invaded a sovereign country. So let me caveat this with the fact that nothing I say in any way I'm about to say supports Russian actions. The interesting thing about a crowdsourced war is it's this almost this interesting vigilantism, which makes some people very comfortable. Like, there's this amazing tech out there. We need to use it for good, in this case, helping Ukraine defend itself from an invasion. And then there's a gross discomfort out there, which you've seen with a number of talks over the years from specifically U.S. government and NATO officials. They're not really comfortable with this being in the hands of like the people. And so this article was really an extension of that entire discussion of where does something so powerful belong. And so I will tell you that anecdotally, it would not surprise anyone to find out that Google Earth has been used. And even though Google Earth, amazing, amazing tool, but Google Earth, you know, it's not updated regularly, et cetera, right? Google Earth has been used to a ton of negative means. So I think where it rests is, one, there has to be some amount of risk appetite. If you're going to make this available to the people, there's a low potential that it may end up in the hands of some bad guys, right? That does not excuse a very strong and robust KYC, know your customer process. At SkyFi, we have an extremely robust process. We use analytics, we use various analytic companies. We use credit card checks. We work with OFAC. Like, anytime there is something that comes up that's even questionable, we switch over to the manual side. And there's a very small group of us on the leadership team that can authorize it, or we can go seek further information. So I think it's there is absolutely the responsibility on anybody providing these analytics to have a robust and strong KYC. At the end of the day, the potential does exist that some bad actor at some point in the future will get their hands on imagery that's coming off any sort of commercial satellite company. What I fear is the snap response to, all right, that's it. Nobody gets access to it, right? Like every single technology, you know, you start with the internet, right? All a bunch of nerds, or well, once you get out of DARPA and you kind of get it into the hands of like a bunch of folks that were like, this is amazing. We're going to pass knowledge to the entire world. It's going to be accessible in a way it's never been in human history. You don't even have to be literate. And of course, there's a bunch of bad things that are happening here too. And I think it's just our responsibility as humans, as citizens, and as business people to just be vigilant, you know, continue to strive to make sure that that doesn't happen, but not to shut everything down if it does.
Okay, switching gears. Prior to joining SkyFi, I know that you spent 5 years at InQtel, which is CIA's venture capital arm. I'm curious to ask how you found your way there after your service in the Marine Corps and what your role was during your time there.
Yeah, absolutely. So I got off of active duty and I flew attack helicopters in the Marine Corps. So did some awesome counter-piracy missions off of Somalia. And then did my time in Afghanistan in Helmand province and went into grad school. Thought I would go be a policy nerd because, you know, I love reading the Week in FT and the Wall Street Journal. And fell in love with tech. I took one class in particular by this Professor Andres, who last I checked was teaching at the National Defense University. Actually, it was a cyber class. But it was, everything changed. That just changed everything. And I was so interested in tech and started to kind of pivot my education. And it was before I had a child, so I could do night courses in that direction. Because, look, I was a pilot. Like, I could shoot things all day. I could fly a plane, but you want me to fix it? That's for my brilliant Marines on the, you know, on the ground to be able to actually understand like the technical side, a lot of that. So started to try to beef up in that, ended up being selected to do this really great fellowship, the White House Fellowship after grad school. I was placed at HUD, so Housing and Urban Development. And certainly not where I anticipated, but I will tell you, I worked for this woman, Janet Gulrich, and she's still there. She's a lifelong civil servant. It was the most expensive disaster year in U.S. history. And so much of what I learned there, I'm actually applying now at SkyFi 7 years later. But I just grew as an American. You know, housing is not sexy. Everybody likes to complain about it. But once you start putting resources and everything, we owe Americans much better than we do around that particular topic. As I left HUD and was trying to figure out what was next, a great sit down with a mentor of mine who said, hey, have you heard of this place called InQtel? And I was like, no. So hopefully Chris Darby forgives me for admitting that in public. But, you know, he linked me up with the then CEO and president of InQtel, who said, hey, check out the PM team. And so I went over there to be a program manager. So amazing, like startup technology, everything. It was such a phenomenal opportunity to work with these amazing companies. My interest predominantly lied in comms and aviation, specifically autonomous systems, which is actually where I met Luke, my CEO, when he was working as a counterpart in one of the companies we invested in. And then my last 2.5 years at InQtel, I took over running the FBI and one of the space intelligence agencies' portfolio, which was really amazing because on that I was working on kind of the government side, taking everything I'd learned from these startups. But as, you know, time went on, this itch, this need to get skin in the game again, you know, It came about the same time, I was exposed to SkyFi, and Luke reached out, offered me, a position at SkyFi, flew out. I was there in Austin, and I flew out to South by Southwest, so they certainly had I would say they had their enthusiastic faces on, but that is truly every day at SkyFi, and fell in love with the team, and so much of what the technology we were bringing to the intelligence community at InQtel. My bleeding California heart always thought we could be bringing this to MSF, to International Red Cross. There's so many folks that can use anything that somebody in the agency or NSA can use in the field. So could a lot of these people that were doing good things, but less on the national security side and more on just like humanity. And so that's why I really love SkyFi. It's also why I'm really proud that we're a true dual use company. And as I told you, I promised to keep that soapbox in my back pocket, but I love the fact that we can, on the same exact platform, we can obviously do a ton of great stuff for national security, but again, commodities traders, like this is important, right? And then we're bringing disaster response capabilities. We're talking with folks all over the world, and bringing this amazing technology to their fingertips.
It's often said that venture capitalists value three things: the founding team, the technology or the product, and the market. Which of those in relative importance are most valued by InQtel, and how would you amend the list to include others that were considered during your time there?
I think the InQtel, and I'm not trying to get around this by any means, but I'll make it a little controversial by throwing this out there. I think where InQtel succeeds, where a lot of other government-sponsored or government programs may struggle some, is that they do a great job of valuing all three. And they do this through having an experienced investment team that rarely comes out of the government, right? These folks know what a good founding team looks like. On the technology, they have subject matter experts that usually have 10 to 15 years in a particular technology, and then they become generalists. I say generalists in quotations, they still have pretty deep knowledge. And so they can pick out what's vaporware, what's not. InQtel follows a very traditional venture model as well, where they rarely will bet on the same tech or two different companies with the same technology. And where they truly succeed based on who their customer is and who they're investing on behalf of is the focus on the marketplace. And it's probably why I am such an evangelist for dual use commercial first companies. There are a lot of amazing venture-backed small defense businesses out there. And while they often fall under this larger umbrella of dual use, they're not cutting their teeth on a commercial market. Let me tell you, being in a company that does, there's not a lot of room to not be good. If a large consumer or large customer of ours finds that we can't do something they can do in-house, we probably have about a week or two to bring that capability to the platform across. Right. And I think that when you're catering to the government, that naturally moves slow, is skeptical and suspicious of commercial companies, even if they are focused entirely on the government, only have US team and everything. You're not getting that edge. You're not getting the edge that you're supposed to get from the dual use. So I would say InQtel is very, very good at investing in commercial first companies. It was very rare when I was there that we would ever invest in a company that had a developed or a developing relationship with the US government. And I've certainly taken that with me to SkyFi. I told you I would get that a little bit of a dual use evangelism in there.
Nicely done. Okay, this brings me to my final question. As I mentioned up top, you spent 10 years in active duty serving in the Marine Corps as an attack helicopter pilot. You have an extremely impressive background. You've worked on counter-piracy operations off the coast of Africa and were in Helmand Province in 2011 in Afghanistan, and spent time at Quantico as an instructor. After such an impressive decade of service, looking back, what is your proudest moment?
Okay, I'll give you a no shit there I was story. So when we were in Afghanistan, we went out for a pretty routine raid. So my helicopter and I was the lead aircraft, and then I had a wingman who was a Huey, right? He had an air crew in the back. And this raid went south. I'll spare you all the details. That's better told over a beer anyway. But we were able to essentially take care of the bad guys, you know, bring in the assault aircraft. So we were kind of like the bodyguards, bring in the other aircraft that were going to take the Marines out after they had completed their mission. And everybody got home safe. About 4 months later, the gunner, the door gunner on the Huey on the wingman's aircraft, she came and found me. And she said, "Ma'am, there are two Marines here to talk to you." I said, "Okay." And I walk out, and there are these two Marines from 3-4. That was the battalion we were supporting. They look straight out of a comic book. One was super tall and skinny, like all, you know, could blow over in the wind. And the other one was certainly shorter and like very muscular, kind of looked like a bulldog, a lance corporal and a corporal, I believe. And I walked over, I said, "Hey, gents, how can I help you? You know, you never know." And they said, "Ma'am, we're from 3-4. And that was interesting because they were on their way out of Afghanistan, right? All they had to do was sit and play video games. And they had taken plenty of casualties during that that deployment, did amazing work for America. And all they had to do was sit and play video games until the aircraft came to like take them out on their way home. And instead, they took a 40-minute bus ride over to the airfield where we were. And I said, "Hey, congratulations, you guys are on your way out. Like, well-earned, guys, you know, basic conversation." They said, "Ma'am, we just wanted to tell you thank you." And I was like, "Thank you for what?" And they were like, "We were on that raid, ma'am." And they like gave me the exact day. And they said, "And it was awesome. And we knew we were good with you overhead." And it was one of those moments in your life that like, I remember that like it happened yesterday, because it was just like, you know, you don't get a lot of feedback, especially as a pilot, right? Like you come back to base most days, right? Like you're doing all this crazy stuff, all these crazy missions, but you're not out there. Like these guys and gals are out there, they're in the dirt, they're getting shot at, they're getting mortared, all sorts of things. And it was just one of those moments where it was like, this is why I'm doing it. Right? Like, yes, America, yes, democracy, yes, all the things, but these two men right here, these two Marines, like, it's why you get up in the morning, you know, it's why you do your job, it's why you stay up late planning so you don't mess it up, it's why you know your systems backwards and forwards, and I guess that's probably, I don't know, that's more of a C story there, but that was really touching to me. And then the other thing is when I went to Quantico and I had like my Marines that were mine, my second lieutenants, and they went off to just do great things. Like there was no greater joy that I had in watching them continue. And many of them are still in continuing to be successful. But yeah, I would say those are my my two things I'm most proud of while I was in the Marine Corps.
Awesome answer. Thank you for sharing. Well, Kate, thank you so much for the time you've given me today. Thank you for fighting the good fight, and thank you for having been a guest on the Splinter Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much. You have a great podcast, and it was a pleasure to be on here.